From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Anna Canny. A widespread internet and cellular outage in Sitka continued into the weekend. Sitka has been without internet access since Thursday after an undersea fiber optic cable broke, cutting off the island from the online world. GCI provides internet and cell service for most Sitkins. In an email to KCAW on Saturday, communications manager Josh Edge said a fiber repair ship is en route to the site of the break in the cable and is expected to arrive in 5 to 6 days. Once on site, Edge wrote, the repairs could take up to 6 additional days, depending on the complexity of the situation. Edge says GCI is currently working to restore service as quickly as possible. On Friday evening, GCI reported that limited text, calling, and internet had been restored for its customers. Some Sitkins are reporting the ability to send texts and make calls in limited areas of town, but service is spotty. And Dr. Kelly Monteleone is an underwater anthropologist at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and an assistant professor at University of Calgary. She's kicking off SHI's fall lecture series tomorrow, Wednesday, September 4th, with a discussion of her work exploring Southeast Alaska's submerged caves using robotics. She'll be joined by Dr. Christoph Richmond, the chief technology officer at Sunfish Inc., a robotics company specializing in undersea exploration and inspection. Tell me a little bit about what an underwater anthropologist is, because it's not a field that I've heard much about.
You're not going to find another one of us around the world.
I am unique.
But I'm looking for the same kind of sites that archaeologists are on the land. Places people have lived, places people were hunting that we can find evidence of butchering or things like that.
So to find human artifacts underwater, that means presumably that there was a time in the past when they weren't underwater. Could you tell me a little bit about what Southeast Alaska looked like in that past when sea levels were lower?
I wish. I really wish I could tell you more about what was happening in different areas, in areas that are now underwater or not underwater. The sea level history throughout Southeast Alaska is so complex. Most of my research has focused on the west side of Prince of Wales Island. And there we see sea level as low as 165 meters. I'm sorry, you're going to have to convert that yourself. But then if you just move a little bit to the east over to Ketchikan, sea levels around the same time were 200 meters above. So we're talking about a very fluid landscape. We don't think of the Earth's crust as morphing and moving that much. But with the glaciers receding, and the weight of the glaciers moving in different ways, you can almost think of the landscape at that time as being like the surface of a balloon where you press in one spot and it goes up in one and depresses in another. And it causes these interesting formations. When you look at these sea level histories, the sea level was changing so freaking fast. I calculated from around that time that it's around 5 centimeters a year of sea level change. Right now, globally, it's moving at 3 millimeters. So that's a magnitude difference.
Wow. I wanted to ask about one of your big discoveries, which was a fish weir that you found submerged off Prince of Wales Island back in 2022. What does a discovery like that reveal?
It pushes back the knowledge in that region, and it's about 1,000 years earlier than Chukaka, but it's in the same area. Chukaka was the human remains found on the northwest corner of Prince of Wales Island. The other name that was known by was On Your Knees Cave. And so that individual would have lived in a community. And I kind of wonder if it was in Chican Bay. It would be a logical place that would be within their hunting ground. And they believe Chukaka was just, you know, hunting for a bear and didn't win.
And you're still exploring, looking at these submerged areas and looking for more things. What's a dream artifact for you?
I would like to find a canoe with animal remains, because human remains trigger other things, that have evidence of butcher marks, so I can source the wood on the canoe, and I can date both the wood and the animal remains. Doesn't that sound like the perfect find? That's my dream find. And my goal would be that it's actually an early enough canoe that the wood is not from Southeast Alaska. A canoe, a vessel of some kind that was actually made further back along that kelp highway, you know, the coastal migration theory. And the kelp highway runs basically from Japan all the way down to California, where you can find these kelp forests and find similar resources to hunt, gather, fish, etc.
Right. So figuring out when people arrived here and revealing a lot more about just how far back time immemorial stretches. What's the most exciting thing for you about doing this kind of work?
I love working with the Tlingit people of Southeast Alaska and the Haida and Tamian too, but the Tlingit are the ones we know have been here since time immemorial. And the Tlingit people really are interested in learning about their ancestors. They proved that very well with Shukaka. And that's what I love about doing this work here is I actually can work with people who see an affiliation to the work I'm doing to understand their past. I always try to link what I'm doing also to climate change. Because when I'm talking about 5 centimeters of sea level rise and we can't comprehend that, that's something that could happen as we're talking about glaciers hitting tipping points and things like that. And so understanding how people survived on that landscape as the sea level was rising, how did people adapt, that could help us moving forward as sea levels keep rising. I hope we never hit 5 centimeters of sea level rise a year again. But knowing that people survived that in that region, I think is a glimmer of hope also. But part of it is that I love history and I love science. And this lets me do both.
That was Dr. Kelly Monteleone with the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. You can watch her lecture tomorrow at noon in person at the Walter Soboloff building or live streaming on SHI's YouTube channel. For many communities across Alaska, permafrost thaw is an existential problem as houses and roads sink into the ground. 2 years ago, a nonprofit and research initiative started a project to map permafrost thaw and erosion and put that data into the hands of the communities themselves. Last month, they expanded the project. Alaska Public Media's Anissa Vitsa has more.
Mamchuk Foss is walking along the edge of the Kuskokwim River in Akiak, and it's storming out. Windy, raining, but she has bigger concerns than getting wet.
This is all falling in. This is all new.
She's gesturing towards the bank of the river, where big chunks of land have broken off, straight into the water.
Within 1 week, we just probably lost about 20 feet.
Whoa. Yeah.
Foss is joined by scientists, and they're braving the rain to measure the erosion using high-resolution GPS.
No.
This is to keep track of how much of the bank is melting away in the river.
It's sinking in the land. No more permafrost.
Foss is the liaison for the Permafrost Pathways Project in her hometown of Akiak. The nonprofit's goal is to partner scientists with Alaskans, like Foss, in communities built on permafrost so the residents can have crucial data about how quickly the ground is melting underneath them. And it's melting more and more as human-caused climate change continues to warm the region. So the Permafrost Pathways Project is expanding. This summer, scientists visited 3 communities they hadn't been to yet. All are predominantly Alaska Native communities, built on top of ground that has remained frozen for hundreds of years. As that permafrost thaws, the effects can be detrimental, says Sue Natale, lead of the Permafrost Pathways Project.
When it thaws, it sinks and it gets like muck, like a big muck pit. And so many of their homes are sinking and they're impacted by flooding.
The project sends scientists to Alaska villages to measure temperatures in the ground and teach locals how to collect the data themselves. Darcy Peter, Arctic Adaptation Lead with Permafrost Pathways, says that's what's at the heart of it, the tribes having control of their own data.
All the data that we collect, all the mapping that we do, it goes straight back to the community. They're the ones who run it and check on it and take the data off.
Peter says it's important for each community to have data about their permafrost because most will have to make a very difficult decision, whether they can protect in place or if they'll have to relocate. Peter herself is Alaska Native. She says the idea of leaving home is particularly difficult for Native communities.
We're so in touch with the land and we know the land so well. That's where my grandpa's grandpa has been. And to have to relocate somewhere else, even if it's nearby, wouldn't want to do that ever.
Nunapachuk in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta is another one of the communities that Permafrost Pathways has partnered with. The community recently made the difficult decision to move to a new village site about a mile away.
Things have gotten so inhabitable and unsafe that they didn't have a choice.
Natalie says the village chose a relocation site that they thought would be less affected by warming climates. and then had scientists from Permafrost Pathways evaluate the land.
Everything we found essentially is just like agreed with what the community already told us.
Peter wasn't surprised by this.
Indigenous knowledge is just like light years ahead of Western science. And so that's, I think, a big part of this project too, is to amplify Indigenous knowledge.
But Natalie says there's also power in pairing Indigenous knowledge with scientific data to help get funding for relocation efforts.
It is a long journey ahead because there are going to be many other communities who are going to be faced with this.
Natalie says Permafrost Pathways scientists will continue their work, but she hopes the federal government will also step up and provide more comprehensive support to communities most vulnerable to climate change. In Anchorage, I'm Anissa Vitsa.